Hello, and welcome to the Comic Book Page Podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Retall.
With us is a whole creative team, actually. We've got William Wilson and Jason Stevens. They are the co-writers of Foo Fighters. We also have the artist, Jason Reeves. So, William, why don't you say hi real quick so people can hear your voice?
Hi, everybody.
Hello.
Okay, and Jason Stevens, you're the other co-writer, right?
I am, yes. Hello.
And then Jason Reeves, you're the artist who's actually doing all the heavy lifting on this, aren't you?
Yeah. Hi.
Why don't we start by you guys giving us kind of the basic pitch of the series? Because I don't think, you know, all our listeners are going to be familiar with it and stuff. So, William or Jason, you want to start with that?
Yeah, Jason, take it.
Oh, thanks. basic pitch of the series. You know, it's basically the world is at war, World War II. You know, right away you're establishing historical context. So while the world's at war, as Will has aptly put it, while all the countries are fighting each other, this super secret squadron has been assembled to fight for the planet. So essentially it's a secret squadron that's been formed to ward off this alien invasion. So it doesn't get much better than that. And that's pretty much Foo Fighters, a collection of international pilots, the world's best, secretly put together to take on this invading menace.
So this is a secret fight against an alien race while World War II is still going on.
Right, you got it.
Interesting.
The world at large does not know what is happening in the skies above. The U.S. government with other world governments decide to, okay, well, let the world do what the world is doing, and let's see if we can stop this thing. So, I mean, we have enough to worry about on the ground. They don't need to worry about up in the skies either. So that's kind of the mindset. That's the mentality of it.
Cool. Interesting. Now, you guys seem to have chosen a very unique kind of distribution methodology for this, going through USA Today. Explain how that all works. I'm really curious about this.
John, it's what happened. Like, was I was me and the guys were just talking about, you know, now with kind of like the whole kind of mood about digital, was how do you put something out in the market and kind of be embraced without, you know, being almost kind of like thrown to the wolves in print, because, you know, comic book stores, retailers are under such pressure to perform because they have to put out books every week, and creators have to do that as well from on the indie side. And it's kind of like sometimes, you know, since I've done, you know, me and Jason Reeves and myself have done some books, and this is Jason's first time to the dance, we kind of talked about how are we going to put out something where we could build an audience, tell the kind of story we wanted, keep telling the story we wanted, but not have the pressure of the print side be kind of like dominated and kind of like our creative mandate.
Well, I guess what we were talking about was trying to get a wide audience on, you know, our respective work, and not having to be a slave to print. Print is great, and we definitely eventually want to do it. But, you know, people, you hear so much about the comic audience being, or the comic industry rather, being kind of this niche kind of industry, or the amount of eyes on it is so small, when it comes to print and stuff. So we want to expand that. We want to go wide. We wanted to give ourselves options. So I think that's a lot of the reason Will, Jason, and I wanted to get that kind of distribution.
Now, give me a sense of how wide we're talking here, because, I mean, this is USA Today, so I've got to figure it's a much bigger potential audience than almost any print comic is likely to get. I mean, can you give me some sense of scale on that?
Well, I mean, scale-wise, go ahead, Jason, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, you got it, you got it.
Scale-wise, I mean, it's you can ask. I mean, I think before I go into this, we've got to give a big shout-out to Brian Truitt over at USA Today, because without Brian, none of this would have happened. I mean, he and Will were kind of driving force with this, and, you know, they had the foresight to say, hey, this might actually work, and this might actually turn into something bigger down the road. So, you know, you got to give it up to Brian for shepherding this whole thing through, and Will having enough faith that this could potentially work. So hats off to them. You know, I think I made a point to Will a couple weeks back that, you know, it didn't dawn on me anyway, personally, that what we're doing essentially is bringing the spinner rack back, you know, to a larger audience. You know, I'm actually doing this podcast right now, and I'm looking at a comic book shop in this little strip mall area. And what's interesting is that, you know, dads, moms, people who may have grown up with comic books but have kind of pulled away from it will not go into that shop for whatever reason. You know, you go to the grocery store, which is to my left right now, and that's where comic books used to be. That's where I used to buy a lot of my comic books, were grocery stores. So we're actually putting something back into the market that's easily accessible to everybody. And a story, it's funny that, you know, we're doing this, I have the story to tell. I was at work, and one of my coworkers turned around to me. She goes, oh, I forgot to tell you, my dad loved your book. He absolutely loves it. He did not know that I worked with you. He said, hey, you got to check out this comic book on USA Today. They launched it. This is the God's honest truth. They launched it, and I am loving every minute of it. And she said, oh, funny thing is, I work with the guy who co-wrote that. That's the kind of audience that we're going for. People that don't normally, they're not walking into those comic shops. They're not buying the comic book. They're doing what we used to do when we were younger. You go into the drugstores, you go into the grocery stores, they're there for you. That's what we're trying to bring back. And I think to the degree we've done that or doing that. So it's pretty innovative, and it's a different way to go. And it's been a pretty crazy ride so far. And I think especially with what Mark Waid is doing right now, when he's kind of throwing down the gauntlet, that only helps our cause. So it's been interesting.
I'm not sure of the actual USAtoday.com numbers, but I mean, I heard somewhere that the paper sells, what, like 1.8 million copies or something like that?
Yeah.
So yeah. I could only assume how many people are looking at it on the internet. But
so what is the – is there any kind of tie-in to the print USA Today? Is there like any kind of a little blurb or an ad or anything that points someone from a print copy of the paper to the strip in USAtoday.com?
Not that I'm aware of. Oh, is that Will?
Right now, basically, yeah. Right now, what's happening? I'm back. What now they're doing is we're on their feeds, and we're sending it there, and we're working with them about a lot of kind of like new kind of out of the box incentives about how we're going to reach audiences and kind of build upon on the. On the brand as we keep rolling it out week after week. I think the one thing that I wanted to stress, like about with what we're doing with the series is, you know, unlike a lot of people that have to put out their book over, whether it's 6 months or every month, is that we have, I don't want to say a luxury, but we have an advantage of being able to build our audience. Listen to what they're saying, and also while we're building that audience with a strategic partner such as USA Today, we can try a lot of really quote-unquote out-of-the-box ideas, traditionally, non-traditionally, and with now with social networking being the way it is, you know, we're not. I kind of look at what we're doing with the series as kind of like almost kind of like a case study, because for us and for USA Today, this has never been done before. So I see it as a real learning experience. And like when Jason tells this story about his coworker, you know, for us, when we decided to go to USA Today, me and Brian Tuitt had spoken about this thoroughly, is that I was, and with the guys creatively, I was more concerned about reaching a new audience and not the same audience, and really embracing that, because I almost feel like because I've done books in print, and I've done a book that's went digital and print and seen how it works on both sides. It's that, take for instance, you know, I just left a comic book store about a half hour ago. You take a book like Saga that just came out, you know, look at all the other books, independent books that come out that same week. If you're doing anything social networking or you're, or looking at blogs or whatnot, Brian K. Vaughan has the media circle. You know what I mean? Like he has that momentum, whether you like his book or you don't like his book, you can't, if you're a creator, and you don't have, the legs that a Brian K. Vaughan does, how are you getting your message out? Because, you know, if we were putting this book out hypothetically at Image and we came out the same day as Saga, you know, I can honestly say, and I know, John, you guys would say this too, you know, everybody would hear about Saga. They wouldn't hear about our series. So that's the other way we're looking at it is, how are we telling the stories we want to tell? Where are we going? What type of platform and outlets are going to give us the voice that we want to tell and get out to them, to the millions and millions of potential readers that may have stopped reading comic books or stopped going into comic book stores, or comic book readers that do get their comic book news from USA Today. That's where we were thinking, just like utilizing our strategic partner in the digital space as much as humanly possible. I never really gave it much thought, like quite honestly, about the print side of it, just because we were doing stuff with the pages and stuff, that it would be probably, one, it would cost too much money. It would add to production costs at USA Today. I just kept thinking to myself with the guys internally, it was almost kind of like, let's just build this and keep building it and talk to people such as yourself and your audiences and go, look, we want to create a story. We want to tell you that story. We want you to keep just tuning in every week, and it's free, you know, like the one thing I can say about our series compared to everybody else's is like, look, we're not trying to undercut retailers or we're not trying to say digital is the future. But what I am trying to say, and I can personally, you can put me on record for this, is there is going to come a time and day where there's a generation of people that are not going into comic book stores and they're not going into bookstores and they're getting their media digitally. And one of the things that I want people to kind of understand with this particular series is we want them to be able to come here first and read it. And, you know, when I grew up reading the Sunday paper, I think I told you this once, John, like a long time ago, you know, one of my favorite strips was Rex Morgan. You know, I wanted to be a doctor because of Rex Morgan, mm-hmm. you know, when I was a kid. It's like I feel like when we create media these days, and that's what I look at it as, you know, we just want like kids to be able to read Foo Fighters. You know, it's a fun read. You know, there's no hard language in it. The three of us were very big on making like a big popcorn adventure, serial, you know, like serial throwback kind of comic book series, but for free. And I think that sometimes, like when people say it's like, oh my God, it's at USA Today, they kind of lose sight of that. It's like, I love the fact that I am very blessed to be working with Jason Stevens and Jason Reeves on doing something that nobody has done before at this particular, with this particular strategic partner, this particular way. And it kind of excites me because this has endless possibilities on where it can go, where we can take it, and what new avenues are presented to us in the digital space. Because if you just put it out in print, you know, we have the single issues, then we would have a run of a trade. We may do a hard copy, and that would be it. I think in digital, we may be able to do a whole lot more as the series progress and as the technology progresses. So I kind of look at it as kind of like, almost kind of like fluid storytelling in a digital space, because Jason could change the way he delivers the pages. The technology could change on the way Jason delivers the pages. So it's going to be kind of like, a learning curve as we deliver this content to the audience.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting because you go back to, you know, I don't want to say the olden days, but really go back about a century or whatever, when serial fiction like the Sherlock Holmes stories and stuff like that was coming out in the Strand, and it was a very similar couple of pages, and it was in the newspaper of the day sort of a thing. So being able to get comic books back out in front of, you know, whatever the audience is for the USAtoday.com website, and I've got to imagine it's pretty big compared to, you know, the totality of the print sales for the top 300 comics in your average month. You know, this is allowing for casual readers and stuff to actually get reintroduced or introduced to comics.
Right.
And I think Jason's story about his coworker's father and stuff is proof in the pudding.
Right. I won't lie. I mean, I'm a collector, and I've been telling Will this over the past couple of days because we've had these discussions. I'm a collector. I like holding a comic book. I like going into a comic shop. I like filling the pages. All of that. And you know, I hope that never changes to a degree.
Well,
but
I think
I'm also a realist too. That I think it will change.
Well, I think that it also, not to detract from what you're saying, Jason, is it the accessibility, like John was saying, is it brings in those casual readers. So somebody who might not necessarily be into those comics, like, you know, those funny books over there in that store that I never go into, would just kind of be a passerby and glance, but then you can have it every week and it's free. It doesn't cost you anything. You know, you can glance at it. I know everybody who was a parent back in the 90s and 80s, you know, when the Sunday comics were still kind of big. I know when I was a kid, I read them every Sunday and my parents would read them too. You know, I know older folks and you'd say Marmaduke and they know what the hell, you know, they know what you were talking about. So
you guys are doing this in USA Today, and you keep mentioning that it's free to the consumer. Now, I'm going to assume then it's like a syndicated strip of old where the USA Today syndicate is paying you guys. You're not just doing this as a charity event for USA Today. So, you know, what are your thoughts on that as kind of a model for not just Foo Fighters, but for comics in general? I mean, is this something... You can't speak on behalf of USA Today, I'm sure, but, you know, is this something that they're potentially spearheading this with you guys as some kind of, you know, digital comics page like we used to get in the paper when there were all these great, you know, comic strips and it wasn't just, you know, Rip Kirby or Flash Gordon or, you know, whatever. I mean, there were a whole bunch of different comics that were available from, and it brought people in to that newspaper in many cases, and that's why they did it. You know, it drove people to their advertising.
Hopefully,
right?
I think that's
a big part of it. I mean, how many clicks are you getting? Is this a driving force to your site? And if it is, how can we profit off? I mean, those are all, you know, that's all taken into consideration. And you know, Will and Brian Truitt over at USA Today, you know, what we want to do, and I think Will touched on this. You know, we want to get to that point where people are coming to USA Today and say, oh, what's the next installment? Oh, those pages are great. I was in a comic book shop today, guy behind the counter. You know, we'd have dealings back and forth, don't know him too well. He said, hey, saw what you're doing at USA Today, and that is awesome. I cannot wait until next Wednesday. I mean, and this is a guy working at the comic book shop saying this. So if that's what we're getting, hey, let's keep it coming, and hopefully those days, you know, of yesteryear when we can flip open the Sunday paper and see Rex Morgan or Marmaduke, I mean, we're bringing that back. So it's a great thing.
I think we have more stories to tell, you know, more stories and different stories to tell as long as USA Today would like to continue distributing our stories. Definitely. I would hope that they would even go further as to, you know, kind of be that particular hub, that newspaper hub for like the various ideas that people have. Of course, you know, that would be great. That would be awesome if you could go to usatoday.com and it would be, you know, like going into the comic shop, except it's free, you know?
Well, and talk about a win-win, because it gives you guys as the creators a great outlet for telling the story. Mm-hmm. It gives USA Today traffic, a reason for people to come to their site, check stuff out. And from a reader perspective, you know, it's free content to me to read and stuff. If everybody's benefiting from that, I mean, where's the downside? And if any listeners out there thinking, well, you know, it's hurting the comic shop, I mean, they're missing the big picture here. Because like you said, with the the dealing you had with the guy at the store, it's like, hey, they're loving it and stuff. This is doing more good for comic shops than any possible damage, because it's not like they're losing a revenue stream here. What they're gaining is potential readers, because it's putting this in front of people that otherwise are probably never going to walk into a comic store. Right. I mean, the concept of a casual comic fan, I think, is gone.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I would totally agree with that. And, you know, a Marvel, DC, Image, Dark Horse, while those guys are fighting one another for an audience share inside a comic shop, you know, what we're, like Will said, you know, this is like case study with USA Today, we're taking the bigger picture. Not to slam those other guys, but, you know, let's face it. And, you know, I'm a comic geek. I love going into comic shops, like I said before, but there is a stigma, whether people want to accept that or not, there's a stigma attached with going into a comic book shop. There's an accessibility issue there. You know, people can poo-poo that if they want. It's probably the truth. And when they took the comics out of the grocery stores, when they took the comics out of the drug stores, that's when the industry started the downward slide, and it's continued, I think, ever since, personally. That's my opinion. And, you know, we're trying to bring it back. We're trying to, what small little sliver that we're doing, however it can help, that's what we want to do. We want to help the industry in any way that we can. And, you know, whether people want to say, oh, you're taking business away from the comic book shop, digital, it's evil, that's not true at all. And if everybody looks within themselves in the industry, they know that's not true.
Yeah.
It can only help.
I think.
Well,
go ahead, John.
I was just agreeing with that. I think it's entirely true. You guys aren't taking any business away from anybody, and you're. It's an additive thing here. I mean,
yeah. Exactly. I think the only people who really are saying that, though, are a handful of short-sighted comic shop owners. I don't know that there's a general feeling that from people, comic fans in general, that digital is gonna, you know, take the food out of the mouths of the comic book industry.
Well, and I think even the comic stores that are saying that, they're talking specifically towards, you know, I think like in Mark Waid's direction, where he's being, I mean, and I love Mark Waid as a creator and stuff. He's done some brilliant work. I've met him a couple of times, found him to be a really nice guy, but he's going so heavy digital in almost a negative print direction. And taking things that would have otherwise been print books and therefore a revenue stream for these stores. And I can see where there's a backlash there. And I don't know that necessarily what he's doing is going to have the potential of expanding the overall comic audience, like something like putting a comic into USA Today does. And I think anything these days that can expand the audience is so needed.
Well, John, real quick, I think the thing is, I think Wade's point is, or I read this a couple, like either today or a couple days ago, I think the problem is, and I think the comic book community as a whole doesn't want to address this, is that the problem you have is that it's almost like the industry from an economic model is set up to play everybody against everybody. You know, the retailers, and I'm a pro retailer guy. I've always been. I love all the guys that have ever supported me. And I always hear them tell me, it's like, you know, we can barely make any money selling these books. And I told someone this today in a comic book store, actually. It's like, you know, you can barely pay for it. I can barely make any money from it. But yet, no offense to anybody at Diamond, and this is not a poor reflection of Diamond, but, you know, Diamond has a pretty good deal in this situation as being the third party. And, you know, John, you and I have had this discussion privately before, and I'll just bring this up. It's like, you know, it's almost like the model for even a guy like Mark Waid, you know, if he doesn't have his movie deal in place and his toys and his video game, even if he does remark, like, even if he does 15,000-16,000 and he makes about $1.17 back, if he paid his creatives out of his pocket, yeah, he's made some money. But technically, once he's paid for printing and shipping and this guy and that guy, on top of everything outside of creativity, he may not have made his money back. And I think the problem with the comic, not the comic book industry, but I think it's the comic book industry, internet universe, is that people want to kind of forget that there are people working hard, trying to make money at the end of the day on their creativity. And I think when a guy like Mark Waid goes, well, you know, this is going to cost money, it almost becomes like he's he's abandoning the ship, but I think that he even understands from an economic standpoint that, look, you know, he's Mark Waid. He can sell some books, but at the same time, you know, my thing has always been with comic books, and especially independent comic books, is that I find it always funny that guys that make names for themselves basically have stayed at companies for 10, 15 years, and then they move over into independent comic books. Either they're braced or they're loved, or they'll say, well, independent comics books never worked for me because I didn't make the same type of money that I made at the majors in the indies. Well, no, you didn't, because these are several types of big conglomerates that can pay everybody, quote unquote, what they want, and then turn around and know that they've owned the characters, they own the IP, they own the movie rights, and they can keep giving you your check every week. So I think people kind of lose sight of all that stuff because there's an economic model from the retailer standpoint to the creator standpoint, and even the distribution model. You know, I think you and I said this the other day, John, like talking back and forth one day, is that, you know, Diamond can't really, in this type of economic climate, really can't lower their prices. Yeah. Certain type of retailers can't lower their prices. Certain creators can't lower their prices. So everybody's kind of like in a holding pattern from an economic model.
Well, and that's what has me so intrigued by what you guys are doing here with Foo Fighters in USA Today, because, you know, I kind of equate what Mark Waid is doing as some guy who's been on the Titanic, watched the thing sink from, you know, out from under him, and he's saying, you know, these life jackets and life vests, these are the future, you know? And I honestly think if Mark Waid could make a go of it and make the business model work for print, he'd be doing that. But
John, I think the thing is, and I think this is what I think Mark's trying to say. I can't speak for Mark, but I think the idea is that you're going to see a lot of guys use their digital to justify whether or not they're going to go to print. I think that retailers are looking at it like, well, he's abandoning us. I think the thing is that if, you know, if you want to work with three or four guys as a creator these days, and everybody, we'll just say all the creatives take financial responsibility on the project. I just think that the model is made in such a way, you know, I know this because I've worked at several different publishers. You know, nobody wants to say this. Certain publishers, whether they want to admit this or not to your audience, they get better printing. They get better market share. That, you know what I'm saying? Like there are certain things that if you don't play ball with certain people in print, and this is no offense to any of my colleagues in the comic book world, but you're kind of almost forced that you've got to go to certain places because other companies that are making comic books are either going to give you the, like, a much worser deal, or everybody now believes, and I know Bob, you and John probably see this and read this all the time, you know, everybody thinks their comic book is going to be made into a movie. So the whole kind of like atmosphere now for comic books is, it's like, well, we see Kirkman making a comic book, so I got an idea that's better than Walking Dead. Or we see 30 Days of Night's been made, so I want 30 Days of Night money, you know, or Todd was my hero in the 90s, so I want to do comic books and toys and the whole nine. And I think the industry as a whole needs to really look at itself, because if we want to keep print alive, and I do, and Jason does, and you and Bob do as well, there's going to have to be, as the digital age moves forward, there's going to have to be some real hard looks at everybody and what they do and what they don't do to help move this industry forward. And that's serious. I mean that as a true lover of comic books.
Yeah.
Because that's the only way it's going to be done.
I think digital is a place, and this is me speaking from a guy who's attempted self-publishing and a guy who's, you know, worked freelance for companies and you know, and from working here with Will at Arch Enemy and on Foo Fighters. I think that digital is a way that we can get more of the creatives who want to do the work and do the books and, you know, and make the content into the arena. I think it's beautiful. I mean, print. I love print. I go into the comic shop, you know, every couple of weeks, and I love my comic shop. It's around the corner from my house. It's beautiful. However, I think that it gets a lot of the creatives, a lot of those good stories that you would never see in print into the arena. And that's, yeah, that's the thing for me. You know, I love all the web comics that are out, man. I read every from time to time, looking at CBR and Newsarama and Comics Alliance, whoever, you know, they're always, everybody's throwing shout outs to like the web comics, you know, to the motion comics and stuff. And we would never have all of those things if we just stayed in, you know, that one mode. Like Will says, everybody's in a holding pattern. We can't stay in a holding pattern, you know?
Just to build off of what Jason's saying real quick, John, is that I think too, that because the way like doing a book in print is, you know, if like say, you know, me and Bob want to do a book together, we'd have to go to you, John. If you're a traditional publisher, we've got to pitch it to you. We got to show you some pages, and you may say to us, John, and I know you and Bob both know like the type of people I'm talking about in the industry will go, well, I don't get it. And then me and Bob go, you know what? We're going digital. It's almost like now when me and Bob decide to do that, if we decide to do that with our project, it's like we've turned our back on print. It's that, again, I feel like this is never being told in the narrative of the comic book industry anymore. The narrative is very simple. Creatives want to create. Digital gives us that outlet. Now, well, we all love print, but the difference is in print, it becomes sometimes so political or so cost ineffective that we go into debt on stuff that we love. And then people go, we can't believe that you guys didn't make any money. And again, like I said, and again, it's like, I really feel like it's at times it's nobody's fault, but at times it's everybody's fault, because it's almost like people's silence is advocacy for things that are going on in the industry. But then at the same time, people want it to grow. You can't let comic books cannot grow if people are being stopped from creating. And digital now is going to be that way for people to put their book out.
It levels the playing field, right? I mean, it allows you to get it out there, but you know, the real problem of digital, and you guys have, you know, kind of got Willy Wonka's golden ticket to some extent on getting on USA Today. And what I mean is, there's so much out there that it's like the comics and the comic shop. It's hooking up a fan with something that they're going to enjoy. And, you know, to some extent, you know, when you say someone's going to not want to green light a print comic book because they don't get it, there's some truth to that, but there's also, they need to make money on it. So, you know, they're going to green light it based on what they think will sell, which is almost like, you know, Hollywood executives, you know, when they green light movies. And I think nobody really knows what's going to catch on, because you look at comic books that have taken off, and, you know, you can look at four comic books and one of them, you know, just takes off. And I can't for the life of me look at that one comic book and tell why it had the spark that these other three that didn't, you know. It's like, well, that one on a slow news day got picked up by, you know, CBR or something, and some people decided it was going to be hot, and all of a sudden the thing sold out or something. But, you know, realistically, with print, you have an extra level of indirection, which is all those comic shop owners. It doesn't matter if a publisher greenlights it. If the comic shop owner doesn't think he can sell it to his customers and he doesn't order it and it ends up not being in the shop, well, there you go. You know, what John and I do every month is we're trying to do interviews and we're trying to talk on our previews episodes about books that are coming up that we think look really cool, just so people will go and beg their comic shops to actually order these books and put them on the shelves. Because if a comic shop doesn't order a book, people aren't going to buy it, right? You know, the comic shop's not going to order it if they don't think that their fans will be interested, whether their fans would or not. It becomes a real chicken and an egg. And now by going digital, if you can, without having that bottleneck in your way, if you can figure out how to hook up with the people who are going to be interested in an alternate reality World War II book with the fighter pilots fighting off an alien invasion kind of in secret, which is kind of a cool idea. It can be the coolest idea in the world. If you can't connect with people who are going to enjoy reading that, you're stuck.
Right. Right.
Well, that's where you've taken away the potential red light of a publisher saying no, another potential red light of a retailer saying, great, it's published, but I'm not going to carry it, to essentially getting on the express lane, because now it's not only available to everybody through USAtoday.com, but like you said earlier, it's free to them. So you've removed so many barriers to entry for the readers. I'm really going to be curious to see how this works out over the course of the run of Foo Fighters and just going forward. I think you guys are definitely paving new ground here, and I think that's very exciting.
Yeah. The one barrier you have left is, out of the billions of things that are on the internet, is still having the person find it. You know, even on USA Today, you know, poking around the site, it's not a guarantee that even if you go to USA Today's site that you're going to find, you know, this strip. Right. Unless you're specifically looking for it, you know.
I think what's cool about that, though, is that we don't have to spend all of that money printing, and we can spend some of that money marketing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, too, Bob. Like the thing is with that is, again, we're working with USA Today on a whole bunch of interesting ways to do it outside of USA Today, as well as inside of it. So we are, like, I know what you're getting at. We are addressing that as we speak.
Right.
On the other side of that, what I was going to say to you about the last thing you were talking about, I just think that when you're creating content these days, and you, Bob, you and John and me, we all go to Comic-Con, and Jason, you see so many, or this is my personal opinion about it, like, again, about digital, is that I think that the problem is at certain publishers, and Bob and you and John monitor this stuff all the time, and I respect you both tremendously, is that certain publishers now, again, I'll use this whole thing about the new narrative about independent comic books, you know, like with the whole new image thing for 20 years. Does it not shock anybody that Marvel and DC are, now that they're owned by Disney and Time Warner, they're not giving out a whole bunch of creator-owned deals? So it only leaves one other place for the top 1% to go.
I do find it interesting that Ed Brubaker, for instance, who had been publishing creator-owned series through Marvel's Icon imprint, decided to put Fatale out through Image.
Well,
Brian K. Vaughan, who had been doing, you know, projects with the big publishers, decided to put Saga out through Image, you know.
Well, Bob, this is my point, and again, your viewers can make up their mind. If me and my colleagues are putting out a book today, and I'm going to use it in very political terms so your readers will understand what I'm getting at, is it is very hard to create when you have to compete against the 1%.
Yeah.
Period.
It's an uneven playing field where success begets more success.
Well, I'm going to build off of what John's saying, Bob, is that we all know this without going into he said, she said, is that when you're at certain publishers, the top 1% guys that like at any corporation or business are being looked at and being pushed. I'll give you guys an example today. I walked into a comic book store and I saw that in certain books at a major publisher, the top 1% guys were given all the editorial content that they wanted in their books. All the indie guys, the lower tier guys, their books were defined, had defined parameters, and they had all ads in them. Now, I would tell anybody this. Are we all the same or only the top 1%, Bob? Because that's my issue with the comic book industry this day. You can't go to cons and have these companies sit there and say they're embracing creativity. It's not moving your company forward by having a guy who basically lost his sweetheart deal across the street to come to you. Well, that we know he's coming because he lost his sweetheart deal. You get what I'm saying? So it's like, to me, as a creator moving forward, if I've got to compete like with everybody, I welcome that. But at the same time, now I'm going to compete on the global stage. So now when people say, well, why did you go there? I can tell you this, Bob. When I get on airplanes or I travel, they go, what do? I create comic books. Where can I read some of your work? USAtoday.com. Everybody understands where they can find my book.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
I think the next level of that is going to be if USAtoday.com makes a comic book page that's real easy to find and Foo Fighters is right there along with, you know, some other content that USA Today is just that they're such a big name, but you know, they need to publicize just like people would buy the Sunday paper because they wanted to read all those comic books back in the day, right?
Right.
You know, before they did all kinds of horrible things to the Sunday newspapers. But, you know, right now, I think that would be a renaissance if USA Today, if you guys are the vanguard of a whole comic section, a real comic section on USAtoday.com.
I want to elect Bob for president.
I want Bob to be my agent, actually.
You know, here's how I look at it, and I have a little bit of a different perspective than probably you guys do, because this is my, you know, this being in Kentucky, this is my first horse to the race, you know, put it in those terms. You know, I hear these horror stories about, you know, creator XYZ through various means. I hear these stories that he's going to get slammed with a bill, or he doesn't really know how it is because he thinks it's a great thing to go to company XYZ and have his content out, and it's awesome. Well, yeah, I mean, to a degree, it is great to walk into a shop and you see your book sitting there on the shelf next to Brian K. Vaughan's saga. That'd be great for anybody. But you're not going to push that many copies because you're not in a grocery store, buddy. You're not in a drugstore. You're not a brand name. You are the small fish in a big pond, and you know the same parallels can be drawn to digital comics. You know, if you can't make yourself stand out from the pack, where you're still the small fish in the big pond, so you're doing yourself no good. You know, so it's really the luck, not really the luck of the draw, that we are at USA Today. If we had taken Foo Fighters to say Image, which we did not submit that book and go, oh well, here's an idea, let's go digital. It never went that route. This was strictly digital from the get go. But had we taken it to Image, and Image, you know, the gatekeepers that they are, decided, nah, not really the right book for us, but thanks for playing. You know, that's dictatorial, and that's their right. You know, they're holding the cards, and that's perfectly within their right. But what digital is doing, it's now leveling the playing field. You know, if I say, oh, well, you know, that's fine, now I'm going digital, and oh, by the way, I'm probably going to be at USA Today. Brian Truitt at USA Today did not have to say yes to us. He did not have to say yes to us. But he saw what it could be. He saw where the potential is. I think Mark Wade is seeing where the potential is. The guys in print, I won't speak for them, but I have an idea of their mindset. So to me, this, you know, Francis Ford Coppola, when the consumer video camera hit the market, he said that's going to be a game changer. Because now everybody can make independent movies, and they won't be beholden to Hollywood to get their films. And it was. This is the same thing. This is going to be a game changer, and whether people, like I said earlier, want to accept that or not, it's here to stay, and it's only going to get bigger. That's my personal opinion about that.
Also, Jason, Foo Fighters is a boon for USA Today, as quiet as it's kept. I mean, they get to produce, you know, this content, and not to pat ourselves on the back, but I think our content is good. Personally, I would read it, and they get to be like the spearheads for this particular movement. But also, like I was reading, Steve Niles was saying that people want this content. You know, he says he gets bombarded by people all the time and, you know, friends or whatever who are not in the industry. And they say, you know, what are comics? Are they still making comics? They're not in the Sunday Funnies anymore. You know, what are these things? And I think getting to that wide audience will, you know, bring those people who are curious about it, who actually would love this kind of stuff. Because I know being a consumer, my consumer side is like, to me, there's no difference between Hunger Games and Foo Fighters and Wrath of the Titans. Like, all of those things can be in the same envelope. You know what I'm saying? Those people that like blockbusters and action adventure and stuff. So if we can, if they can see it, I believe, then, you know, like Bob was saying, if we can get it to them, we'll be better for it. The industry will be better for it.
I think when you take a book, just as an example, because it's probably one of the hottest books out there right now recently, you know, you take Saga, you know, just offhandedly ask your mom, hey, what do you think about this idea of Saga, this book that's out? No clue what you're talking about. Oh, what do you think about Spider-Man? Oh, I love that guy. Right. You know, the industry is making its own self a niche market. It really is.
Well, and I think
I don't know if that's an apt comparison. I got to call you on that one because, you know, you could make the same comparison and say, you know, what do you think about, you know, such and such Hunger Games movie or something like that, and then talk about like a really good quality independent movie that you were just saying anyone can make a movie and your mom wouldn't have heard about that either. You know, so, you know, it's you're going to have independent things that aren't as popular. It doesn't mean that they're less good or any less deserving of attention.
No. I'm not saying that. I'm not drawing a quality issue. I'm drawing a accessibility parallel. You put Spider-Man up on USA Today and people instantly recognize what Spider-Man is. You put Saga up there, it's going to take a while to get their bearings.
Yeah, well, Spider-Man's been around 60 years and
exactly.
or 50 and,
right. but
and
my,
Saga's
my
been out a
being,
week. You know?
You put Saga, let's put this, if you keep Saga in the comic book shops as it stands now, 20 years from now, and you keep it in that shop 20 years from now, who's going to know about Saga if it's not a movie or TV show? Just the comic book fans. You put Saga on USA Today with the hope that it will be exposed to people around the world, whatever. I would argue that you will have more people that would know what Saga is.
Did you read Saga? I don't think you could put Saga on USAtoday.com.
You couldn't. I was telling Will, I read it last night, and I was like, probably not PG. Right away. That's my point, though. My point is accessibility.
You brought up through a side door a very interesting topic, though, okay? Mm-hmm. And that is rating system, right? Because there are certain comics that have content that you just cannot put on USAtoday.com.
Well, that's on the creator's shoulders. The creator has to know, well, and USA Today would – I mean, they're proofing this stuff. I'm sure they are.
Sure, but I'm just saying –
they're not going to throw anything up on their site.
Right, but you might want to tell a story that's not a PG story.
Right.
I would say this. This would be my argument to that. Stan Lee told some fantastic stories, and not once did he use an F-bomb in Fantastic Four.
And I'm not saying he had to, but
I think he could tell stories without dropping F-bombs.
He could do the Invisible Woman without her having to be sans costume to be invisible or whatever. You can do that kind of a stuff. I mean,
you can. But,
you know, I can do a great movie that is a PG movie, but that doesn't mean that, you know, Pulp Fiction isn't a great movie too. Quentin Tarantino, could he have made that as a PG movie? Sure, but it wouldn't have been the same movie, right?
Well, it would definitely not have been the same movie. I agree.
Every creator doesn't necessarily want to do PG or PG-13 stuff. So I get what Bob is saying. I think I look at a lot of
you can't blame the larger outlet for that.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm not blaming the particular outlet. What I'm saying is, you can do a rating system, not speaking for USA Today at all, but just saying that you can do a rating system. Video games do it all the time. They have trailers on their sites, IGN or GamePro or whatever, and you can't watch that trailer unless you're of a certain age. You know, I mean, you have to type in your age to watch it. Like the new Walking Dead thing, you have to type in your age to watch, and that trailer didn't even have anything in it.
And there's like, you know, what 13-year-old's not going to type in that they're 18 to watch that trailer, you know?
No one would do that.
I'm not
exactly.
I'm saying to not indemnify the company, you know.
Right. I'm not arguing with you guys. I'm just saying that, you know.
No, you're making a great point.
You know, for certain things, you know, there are going to be outlets that are going to be more just corporately family friendly, you know, USA Today kind of stuff, and they're going to keep things to a PG, PG-13 level. So, you know, and that's great. You know, there's lots of great stories and lots of great content that can go up on USA Today, and I wish they would make a very strong presence like that. But then I'm suggesting that there might be some other site because, well, there's certainly stuff that is of a rating greater than PG-13 on the internet, right? You know, that there could be other sites that could, you know, do a similar thing if they had the right visibility for, like, kind of R.
Nobody says no one is saying that none of these comic book companies like Image, Dark Horse, Marvel, DC, they're perfectly capable of putting up a section on their own site, say, hey, this content's free, to drive people to the shops. They choose not to. You know, if they want to tell those stories that you can't find at USA Today, well then Image put something on your site that will allow people to read that for free and drive those people to the comic book shops. You know, well, maybe I don't know how you could do it, but it can be done.
I guess my thing about this whole particular where we're taking this conversation right now is I think it's twofold. I think that when you get out of Marvel and DC with the other companies, you know, they've been around, you know, Image and Dark Horse and all these other companies, you know, 20 plus years. But the thing is, I think what Jason was trying to say, and I think this says a lot about the comic book industry just as a whole, is that when people think of comic books, they think of Marvel, DC, and everything else kind of falls short because that's what the benchmark is. And I think what Jason's getting at with Saga in particular is that Image has been around 20 years. And if you ask comic book fans, obviously that are aware of comic books, they're going to know the Image books. But what is Image's impact on 20 years of being in quote unquote media on the average consumer? It's other than Walking Dead currently being on TV and Spawn in the 90s, that's a long gap of being in the marketplace and having no Spider-Man, Wonder Woman, Batman, Justice League, you know, the Hulk, the Avengers in 20 years.
I agree with you. And I would say that 99.9% of people watching The Walking Dead have no idea that Image even exists.
Oh, as in, totally.
You know, probably that's a high, but you know, what I mean.
But, Bob,
exactly right.
Well, but Bob, off of what you're saying is, and this is where, like, I guess, like when we talk about USA Today and then the others, Bob, just as a consumer, or even if I was as a fan and I bleed the Image eye, so to speak, don't you think that Image is kind of at fault that nobody knows that the show on cable everybody's watching is based on an Image comic?
I don't know that Image is at fault because it's, you know, licensing and all that kind of stuff. Kirkman, you know, sold that stuff to AMC.
But they could still be putting their ads in, you know, Maxim and all these other places.
Could, but, you know, it's economies of scale. Okay. You know, I really don't think that personally, you know, USA Today, if they want to start some big thing in digital comics, they're in a better place than, you know, they have more name recognition and can do things that Image Comics can't. If Image Comics went, you know, just totally out there pushing digital comics, they are probably not in a position to make as big of a splash as a USA Today is, or, you know, any other, you know, like if entertainmentweekly.com or, you know, some of these other, you know, type of websites that are more media and Hollywood related, they just tend to have much more appeal and mind share with the public.
Well,
you know,
comics are
accessible as you want to make them, as the industry goes. I mean, they really are. If you want them back in the grocery stores, if you want them back wherever you want them, then do it. I mean, whose fault is this?
Well, I say we do comics anywhere they want to have us. If E.T. wants to have us do comics on their site, or Maxim wants us, Arch Enemy, to have comics on their site, call
us.
We
have no shame.
We will create content for you.
I think you guys are, like I said, paving new ground here, because it could be that I'm sure there's magazines about soap operas and stuff like that that have a website that if they had some comic book type story that was a soap opera-ish story on it, that could drive traffic to their website too.
Right.
So I think there's a lot of potential in this format, in this distribution model, where, you know, you've got the site essentially paying for the content, the creators are able to tell the stories they want to tell. Granted, they've got to be appropriate to the site, et cetera, but the readers are getting stuff for free. It's a win-win. And I think one of the smart things you guys did with Foo Fighters is you're telling essentially a Hollywood blockbuster film in comic book format. that's something that a lot of readers would be perfectly comfortable watching on TV, getting the DVD, seeing the movie of. Therefore, the content's not alien to them, if you'll pardon the pun or whatever. It's accessible, and because it's in comic book format on the website, it's more likely to get people to stop at that comic store they pass the next time around than watching something like Walking Dead or a Spider-Man film or whatever. So I think this is a very exciting experiment you guys are trying and doing, and I'm glad you're kind of doing this kind of with that case study mentality, because that implies to me that you're going to be taking notes, you're going to be tweaking things as you go, you're going to be playing around with the format, the distribution model, and all of that to kind of fine-tune it, because this is more likely to be the future of comics than digital, than motion comics, than print, than anything of the sort, because this gives casual readers a chance to experience new content with no barriers to entry. How can you get better to that?
I agree with you, and I really think that digital just needs to drive more digital, and figuring out how to make more revenue streams digitally, trying to take a digital comic like this and drive people to go to a comic book shop, that's going the wrong direction, I think.
Well, I don't think it's trying to drive them to comic shops. I think, though, because people would be reading comic book pages, that would make them more naturally inclined to consider going to a comic shop. There's a subtle difference there to me.
Or, Bob, they could be going into a bookstore and buying content. And I think that's the other thing. It's like, you know, I think as long as comic books are being sold, that should be the goal. I think it has to be, I just keep harping on this. I think this industry is going to have to really look at itself and really figure out how it's going to reach a consumer, how it's going to reach a digital consumer, how they're going to try to make everybody happy. I think what's great with what we're doing at USA Today is we're getting to tell what we want at USA Today, and people get to read it, and they get to enjoy it. And again, like for us, you know, I think it's an interesting topic of conversation that, you know, either this is going to drive people into stores, either it's going to drive them to reading more web comic books like Jason was talking about, or, you know what I mean? I just think that there's a lot of positives that it could do in a lot of different ways. And again, it could be that people start reading more web content that's comic book related, which is awesome. Or it could bring people into comic book stores, or it could make a lot of companies really look at what we're doing. And like Jason said, you know, from Maximum to Rolling Stone to whatever, you know, call us, we'll do it. You know, because again, I think that there's, when you take that kind of approach, I think good things are going to happen because you're in business with like-minded people.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And so they get your vision. You're not trying to sell them on the future. You're selling them on the now. And it's not about being short-sighted. It's about creating that content and delivering it.
Well, speaking of delivering that content, this gets updated on the USA Today site, and we'll have a link in the show notes. Every Wednesday?
Yes, every Wednesday, correct.
New comics for New Comic Day.
How many pages go up every week?
Three,
okay, cool. And how long of a story is this, or is that to be determined as it goes?
Well,
it's going to be, as of right now, Foo Fighters is going to be ongoing.
Cool, so 3 pages a week,
yeah.
Pretty much forever, or until the aliens get defeated.
Hey, in an epic tale between good and evil, the forces of good and evil have to battle forever. Come on.
Yeah, let's hope this is a never-ending battle then. Yes.
Our plan is not going to look pretty good after this.
Hey, man, we gotta take the fight back to the aliens world at some point.
There you go. Yeah.
Teach them a thing or two. That's
it. Yeah, I mean, you know what? It's been a great ride. I mean, and it's still going on. And like I said, Brian Truitt over USA Today and Will, I mean, those they were the two driving forces behind this whole thing. And, you know, Brian had enough grace and faith to say, hey, yeah, why not? Let's do it. And we did it, and we're still doing it. And, you know, the door, I know Will's company, Archenemy, he's always looking for new creators, new story ideas, new artists. It's a very open place, and it's an exciting time to be over there. And, you know, I'm a newbie to all this, but I've heard the stories. You know, it's the comic industry can be a feast on its own kind of thing, from what I understand at times, you know, but what we're doing, everybody's welcome. I mean, it's a big house, so come on in.
Cool. So any final thoughts you guys have, Will?
I was just going to say Bob should be our agent. I like how he's championing our cause. That's my final thought.
How about you, Jason Reeves?
I just want to say thanks to you guys for taking the time out to talk to us. Oh, and I should probably highlight, I don't want to take all the credit for the art. I want to highlight my colorist, Luis Guerrero. He's awesome.
And our letterer.
There you go.
Yeah, our letterer, Taylor Bills.
They make me look like a superstar. It's not all me.
Cool. Very kind of you to do that. And Jason Stevens, any final thoughts?
You know. Like I said before, it's a fun ride, and you know, I hope everybody enjoys the story. I want to thank you guys for having us on to do this and get the word out and spread the message, and that always helps. So yeah, it's, you know, enjoy. Go to USA Today. Enjoy the story, and every Wednesday.
Cool.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you, John.
We're definitely going to want to hear in a couple of months, you know, how this is going, and kind of how, again, that case study pans out, because I think what you guys are doing here, both story-wise, is very interesting and very exciting, same with the art, but also business-wise and just thinking out of the box and trying to get new readers into the comic book hobby, be it in print, digital, or whatever. It's expanding the potential audience, and I think that's just a win for everybody.
Yeah. Thank you guys for doing this. I mean, you guys are at the forefront of this. I think it's, you know, it's kind of like the next generation, you know, of getting comics in front of as many people as possible.
That's what we want to do.
And thank you guys.
Yeah. Again, thank you. Thank you. You know, now, Bob, I feel like super responsible now, the way you put that. You know, before I was like, this isn't, we're just putting up pages. Now I'm like, wow, I got to be responsible and stuff.
We're going to start referring to this as Spinnerack 2.0, Will.
What did you say, John?
We're going to start referring to this as Spinnerack 2.0.
Oh, nice.
So cool.
I like it.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.